Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
It's an important time of year for us, for our team, and these moments obviously are emotional and mean a lot. So really happy about the win, and obviously going home, split 1-1. You gotta continue to stay focused.
Well, James, it's 1-1 after two games of the Leafs Bruins 4.0. Kind of where I thought it would be, but obviously you never know. Two games in, what is your top line reaction to the series so far?
It's been good. It's been entertaining. It's been, it feels like this is going to be a long one. It's going to be close. What was it? I'm curious for you. What was it like being in the building in Boston? Did it feel like it did in those other series in 2018, 2019, 2013? This Boston team doesn't seem... I know they had 109 points. I know they won the President's Trophy last year. They don't seem as intimidating. Maybe it's the not having Chara and Patrice Bergeron, or I don't know what it is, but they don't seem to have the same aura around them as they have in the past.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Like, the atmosphere in the building is still really good and it still gets going pretty good, but the team obviously isn't, to your point, the same quality. Even last year, not the same quality. Obviously that was like a record setting team, but the Leafs are obviously a different team since 2019, since all those other series. So it's not really like, it's a rivalry, but it's like kind of like a rivalry that was like on hold for a little bit. I think it'll just kind of heat up as the series goes on, and it feels like it's destined to go seven, doesn't it? Like, history will just dictate that that's what's going to happen.
Unless there's like some kind of a turning point, like an injury, or, I was going to say goaltending falters, but Boston's got two options that they can go to. So it's a bit different situation, but. Yeah, I mean, six or seven for sure. I think from the Leafs perspective, you probably don't want to have to go to a game seven in Boston just because, the story, Chris Johnston wrote the story before the series about how intimidating it can be to play there and the atmosphere. I mean, that's like a top in the playoffs. It's what, a top three, top four atmosphere in the league.
For sure.
But I full marks to the Leafs in game two. You thought they allow that goal late in the first period, go down 2-1 after playing pretty well, and I think that game could have went either way, right? And how much time was left when Matthews scored? Like, it felt like we were going to go OT and maybe a long OT, and then just a game breaking play from their best player wins them the game, and then they lock it down pretty well at the end.
Yeah, and I think that's where we should start. We should talk about game two and some of what went on. Obviously there's some big stuff going on with the team not even on the ice, with William Nylander's absence and mystery around like when he's going to be back and everything like that. Yeah, we'll get to
that. Big news. Do you have breaking news on William Nylander?
I do not. So you mentioned Matthews, and that's just like, it's recency bias, but I was trying to think, like, is that his best playoff performance? It's certainly got to be in the running. Like, there was that game in the Tampa series.
Wasn't there a Boston game too? Didn't he break through with a couple goals in one of the, was it 2019?
Yeah, that sounds right. Because I think he had 5 goals in that series in 2019. Let me find it.
I remember there was like a lot of attention on him and he hadn't scored and it wasn't going well for them early in the series. And then in one of the games, he had a breakthrough. I think I want to say game 5, if I remember.
It was 1, 2, 3, game 4. But they lost.
Mm.
Game 3, he had a goal and an assist and they won.
Mm.
And he actually scored in 4 straight in that series. But it's in there. And I think why it's in there is it like, he just did a lot of different things. Like it wasn't just, I mean, that goal in itself was just really like, it's a ridiculous goal. The fact that he catches it with his left hand while he's got like McAvoy on his back. I mean, the pass itself is a tremendous pass for Max Domi. And then just to kind of go in and like,
well, it was like the goalie wasn't even there. It looked like it was like a peewee goalie or something. Like it was just so smooth and easy. Like,
well, and what's strange is like he's not been the greatest at breakaways over the years. Like, and obviously, like, I mean, he doesn't get a ton. Shootouts haven't been amazing, but that was like, I don't know. Like, that's a play that an MVP makes, and like physically, he was like a force in that game. Hunting pucks.
I think the first period alone, didn't he have like 5 shots in the first period? Like it started right from the very beginning of the game that he was just, even the Domi goal is Matthews hits the post and it ends up in front of the net on Domi's stick.
Well, and that was something that they talked about after game 1 is wanting to get pucks to the net and kind of, I mean, that is exactly what they were talking about. Get a puck to the net and then Domi gets a rebound and scores. And that in itself is like a pretty cool story that he gets a goal almost like exactly 20 years to the day that his dad last scored a goal for the Leafs in the playoffs. Like that's a cool story in itself. And credit to that line. Like I wondered if they were going to change that line after game 1, cause I didn't think they were very good. And I think we should talk a bit about Sheldon Keefe in a second, but is there anything more to add to Matthew's performance in game 2? Like he was the best player on the ice. And if he's going to be the best player on the ice, they have a very good chance of winning the series.
Well, you can see Boston struggling with the matchup against that line. And, you know, there was some discussion would they play McAvoy with Lindholm together and just put all of their eggs on defense in the one basket. And, you know, with the way that the Leafs lineup's been configured, Boston hasn't really wanted to do that. And just without Bergeron, like if they had Bergeron, it's a different story, right? Like he would be the nullifier against Matthews, and Boston's just not as strong down the middle as they used to be. So, I mean, I look at Boston's forward group and it's like, I think they had 3 players that had 60 points after Pasternak. It drops off real fast. So, and Pasternak, I know he had the goal in game 2, but it's not like he's been all over the ice and dominating either. So there's a bunch of interesting things that have been happening.
Well, one of the things that stood out, James, like in looking at the series in the regular season is they just had no answer for Matthews. And to your point, like they tried something different to start the series, pairing up like their 2 biggest defensemen, Carlo and Lindholm, and hoping that would be enough. And obviously they've been using the Charlie Coyle line against Matthews, but like in game 1, it worked. In game 2, it was just like, there was nothing that they could do. That line was just so on it. And I noticed it's interesting, like just watching like little tweaks they do, like they or tweaks that the coaching staff makes, like they were loading that line up in the offensive zone, like every offensive zone draw that they had, basically that line would come onto the ice. And it was interesting, like after the first period where they basically just kind of rolled their 3 defense pairs evenly. And often what was happening is like Edmondson and Liljegren were coming out for offensive zone draws with the Matthews line. And I was like, that doesn't really make sense. And then in the second period, they changed it and suddenly it was more Riley and Liljegren together. And I don't know, like they just kind of gradually took over that game to the point that, you know, Matthew scores that big goal and they win game 2.
You know, part of what's enabling that is the Leafs are getting good contributions down the lineup. You know, like they're getting minutes they can trust from the 3rd and 4th line, especially. I don't even know if you should call it the 4th line. I mean, everyone's calling it that, but that line is playing more than the other line. So isn't the Kampf, Dewar, Reeves line the 3rd line now, if they're playing more and getting more difficult minutes and making more of an impact in the game? Like feels like the other guys get called the third line just because they have more offense, but Kampf has looked pretty good. And I like the way Dewar's playing, and what that, if you have a line that you can like that you can play against decent players, you can give them some defensive zone draws. It opens up the door for what you're talking about. Unleash Matthews, Domi, and Bertuzzi offensively.
Yeah, it's a good point about their fourth line. I mean, I know you're not calling it their fourth line, but
I'm calling it the third line going forward. People are going to have to adapt to that.
Well, I mean, we'll see what the lines end up looking like when Nylander eventually comes back. But I mean, really down the stretch of the regular season, that combination of Dewar, Kampf, and Reeves, they're really effective. And it's interesting, like they get Dewar and he played a bunch last season with Reeves. So like clearly they know how to play together. And they're just like Keith brought this up, but I think it's a good point. Like there is an identity to that line now. When I mean the first half of the year, the fourth line was really not good at all and had no identity and was kind of shifting all over the place. And part of that was Ryan Reeves got off to a really rough start. And now like physically, they're just like really imposing. And to your point, like the Holmberg line has been fine. But that's what they need Matthews to do, like to get back to Matthews. Like this is what has been lacking, obviously, in past playoffs. Is there just haven't been enough moments like that. And if that will happen more and Marner will get going, like Marner still doesn't have a point in this series. That's going to change at some point. They haven't had Nylander, obviously, all series. That's going to change at some point. So, I mean, well, there's reason.
Tavares gets the goal too, right? Tavares, with the snipe. So, you know, two of your big guys break through. Yeah, I would correct you too. Like they've had playoff games where those players have made an impact. They
haven't had enough of them. I agree with you. Yeah, they've had them. They just haven't had enough. And like that's
they need them late in the series too, right? Like it's all well and good for them to break out in game two. But anyway, it's interesting. You know, the game one was obviously a mess, and the Leafs made some of the same mistakes in game two. Like they gotta figure out the penalties and the penalty kill. Like it's gonna burn them again if they keep. They're taking so many dumb penalties.
Well, and honestly, James, like early in game two, that's how it felt like it kind of felt like it might repeat itself. I thought they came out and were much more restrained, much more in control, had a good first period. But like then McCabe takes that penalty and you're just like, oh, man, like this is literally what you spent the day before talking about, the morning before talking about, like, don't take needless penalties. He takes a penalty, they score on it, and obviously their penalty kill remains a problem. So those are points to circle. I don't know if there's anything you can do at this point about their penalty kill. Like, do you, like, it kind of is what it is. I guess their power play just has to be really good to kind of overweigh it or outmatch it.
I mean, you could think about using Matthews more on the penalty kill.
Yeah, that was my thought.
I don't like the personnel on the penalty. Like, you know, Nyes is there, and like they're gonna have to lean harder on the right personnel on the penalty kill, I guess. But I don't know what you do on the blue line on the penalty kill, because it feels like the D's having a hard time as well.
Well, I mean, what's interesting about game one is they didn't really give up that much in game one. And even in game two, like I thought game two, they gave up more. And some of the numbers for some of the D aren't great in the series. Liljegren, the numbers and aren't very good. Edmondson, they're not great. Edmondson played a ton in game two when they're trying to protect that lead. Were you surprised that Keith didn't change anything in the lineup for game two, whether it was on defense, whether it was at the forward group? Like, I really thought that there was a chance that Brody came in, but it kind of feels like they're just not having that. And credit to you, because you pointed that out maybe with 10 games left, that you thought there was a chance that Brody just wasn't in. And I just could not fathom that. And he's not in, and like they're marching
on. It's because of how well Benoit played down the stretch. Like that's what he's the one who pushed him out.
Right. Yeah.
I guess the other person who could sit would be Liljegren.
Yes.
But they weren't going to not play Edmondson or Benoit or Labushkin. Like the whole idea of this team and what they did at the deadline and what they're trying to do this season is to have that physicality and that element in this series. So that's why I thought Brody might find his way pushed out. He's a pretty good number seven defenseman option to have. I feel like Brody would be fine if you bring him in down the lineup.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, if the choice is between Liljegren and Brody, and I can use Brody on the penalty kill, I'd just rather have Brody. The counter is, like, Liljegren's a better puck mover. They really lack puck movers. You know what I mean? Like, that's the trade-off that you're kind of weighing. I mean, so we'll see.
I know the D pairs have been scrambled like crazy, but statistically, the Riley-Lyubushkin pairing is up among the league leaders. 79% share of the scoring chances. McCabe Benoit is pretty solid, 64%. And then it's really the Edmondson-Liljegren pairing that's gotten filled in quite a bit. And they've actually played more minutes than the other two pairings together. Now, that leaves out the minutes with what you're talking about, where the pairings are kind of scrambled up and late game situations, whether you're looking for a goal or you're looking to protect the lead, they're all over the place. But the problem statistically, at least in the three regular pairs they've been using, has been Edmondson and Liljegren. So that makes me wonder if you could look at Edmondson Brody, I guess, would be the option you could look for. To answer your question that started us down this path, I wasn't that surprised they didn't change anything. I think it was the right move. I mean, easy to say in hindsight, but I think what they're trying to stick with some of the things that work down the stretch for them, especially up front. They're trying to stick with a more spread out lineup. And I think game two was vindication for Sheldon Keefe that he should have stuck with what he did. And there was even talk about changing the goalie. Like, I think that would be madness. You know, I think so. And Samsonov came through for Keefe and showed that was the right call as well.
We'll get to Samsonov in a second. But I think we should continue a little bit on Keefe, because I mean, one thing that's been a problem for him in past playoffs is, like, it just feels like he over tinkers. Like, it's just like, it's like, I need to do something, and every game it's something. And like, there's an aura of unsteadiness, where you look at like some more veteran coaches. Like, I just remember noticing with John Cooper last year, is just like, they kind of just like kept going with their thing. This is who we are. And I think it's like a little bit of an evolution, a mini evolution that he just kind of looked after game one and said, you know what, to your point, James, Domi, Bertuzzi, Matthews, that line was great for them during the regular season, not changing it. The defense really didn't give up that much in game one. We're just going to leave it. These are the pairs that work best for them down the stretch of the regular season. Going to leave it. And to your point, like, it paid off. Like, Domi had a really great game two after a not great game one. And maybe that's like something that I personally just need to think about it with Keefe, is like, he's not like super experienced. Like, it's not like he had been in the NHL coaching for a decade as an assistant coach. Like, this is all his NHL experience. And maybe that's just like a little mini lesson where he's like, you know what, let's just let it play out a little bit longer before we rush to the whiteboard and change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, it's steady. Like, you chose this lineup configuration for a reason for game one. Just because it didn't work doesn't mean you abandon it right away, because the reasoning was sound with why you chose it. Well, that's why I don't know how much you want to get into it. That's why I disagree. After game one, you said they should put Marner with Matthews. I totally disagree.
Oh, let's talk about it. That's great. I love when we disagree. What do you disagree about?
I disagree that they should have done that. I think that spreading out the lineup, it changes the way that Boston has to put their lineup together, and they really have to respect that Tavares line. If you put Marner up with Matthews, they're so much less potent further down. And I know Marner hasn't made a big impact offensively in the series, but they have to respect the fact that he could.
So here's why I disagree with that. I don't think I think the idea, and I wrote this today for The Athletic about Nylander and where he might fit in when he comes back. I think the idea that the spread offense thing works is just, I don't think it actually has proven to work at all. I think the idea that, oh, like, yeah, you have Marner on a different line, Nylander on a different line. Oh, great. Like, that's harder to defend. I think in theory that makes sense. I don't think it's actually borne out. It actually hasn't borne out, really. Like, there's not really a lot of evidence that it's worked, aside from, like, Matthews has been able to function just as well, if not better, without Marner. I just think.
I mean, that's not a small thing, and
it's a very big thing for sure. But
Bertuzzi and Domi have been better as well. I mean, having those guys going is vital. Like, if they don't have, like, they're getting so much more from Bertuzzi and Domi. That's the big piece of it.
Well, the way I look at it is I look at like each playoff game is kind of like, I don't know, five regular season games, 10. Like, you can't really wait very long. And I've just noticed, and even in game one, the odd shift that Marner got with Matthews got scoring chances. And in game two, that changed. Like, Domi suddenly was creating and Matthews was creating. I just think the Tavares-Marner combination, I mean, the numbers for that line in this series are not good.
They're terrible.
Not created anything.
Marner hasn't played well, and the line hasn't worked. I think they got to get Nyes off there. They got to do something different.
Well, so, I mean, we can get to Nylander in a little bit, but I guess I just think I am more scared of that line if I'm the Bruins, if Marner's on it. I'm more scared of those two guys together is kind of where I land. Now, the question is, like, what does that mean for the rest of the lineup? Can you create a lineup that actually works elsewhere? I think, like, I'd be intrigued to see Domi, Matthews, Marner and kind of see what that looks like. They've dabbled it with it, like, here and there, like the odd shift. But yeah,
the benefit of having a Matthews is that he can lift up.
Yeah.
You don't have to play him with another $11 million player to be effective. And that's what was happening down the stretch for the Leafs when they were winning a lot. And I think they got to stick with that because that's an identity that they haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, what percentage of their recent playoff games have they split Marner and Matthews?
Well, last year they did a little bit. Yeah, you're right. Like, it's mostly been their combination. And
I think this is one of the things that, so they want this, they want their DNA to be slightly different. They want to have guys who are, you know, harder than Ed and Snot and Truculets and all that stuff. And Domi and Bertuzzi have looked really good with Matthews. So to me, that's a huge positive for them late in the season and in this series that I think they need to stick with. And Marner's got to figure it out. Like, Marner's got to play better than he has.
Yeah. See, I'm alone in this. I actually didn't mind his play in game one. I think what, to me, it feels like a little bit of waste of Marner because right now, like, Matthew Nyes is not a confident offensive player. John Tavares is what he is at this point. Like, he's at a different stage in his career. He still had 29 goals in the regular season, but like,
Marner should be able to help that line and do something. Make, you know,
but who are you making plays to? Like, you need to be able to make passes to people who are open. And if those guys aren't open, like, what do you want him to do? Now, you could say, well, he should shoot the puck more. I think he has four shots in the series so far. Game, that's not enough.
You didn't mind his performance in game one, but do you, like, you go back and you look at the shots that he had and they're all from outer space. Like, you know, he's not.
Yeah, but James, one of those shots, like, he took a shot. He got out for an offensive zone faceoff with Domi and Matthews, and he took a shot from deep on purpose just to get the puck to the net. And Matthews almost scored on the rebound. Like, that was purposeful. I just don't think he has enough.
He's not getting anything.
Yeah. Fair. Like, he makes 10.9 million on the cap, and he's a 30 goal scorer. Like, they need him to be a source of offense himself. I
get Nyes off that line. So let's take a break and then let's get into that,
and let's get into Nylander, and then we can get into Samsonov. There's lots to cover. Let's take a break and get more into the Nylander stuff.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You mentioned Nyes, and we'll see what happens with Nylander for game three. Sheldon Keefe was asked about it. Yeah.
What did he say today?
He basically just said that he's a quote possibility for Wednesday. Obviously, they were traveling back from Boston today, being Tuesday. So we'll see what happens at the morning skate. We'll see how, you know, they'll see how Nylander feels. It kind of feels like there's a good chance he'll be back just for me watching him at that morning skate ahead of game two. Like, it seems like he's making progress. It's also possible they'll say, you know what, there's 2 days after game three. Let's give you that time and fully make sure that this is in the past, whatever the hell it is. But I do think you're right. I think they need to make a change to that second line. The problem, James, if you don't have Nylander, is say you want to put Yarncroc there. Well, then that means you're going with Nyes, Robertson, Holmberg. And I just don't think they trust that. So that's right. The issue, I think.
Right.
But I think the interesting question
is... And the other option to come off out of the press box is like Gregor, I guess, right? Like they don't really...
They don't
there's have, not really... Right?
Yeah. And they don't want to touch Dewar, Kampf, Reeves. So like, what do you do? But if Nylander comes back, I think that's where it gets really interesting because you could just take Robertson out and play him with Holmberg and Yarncroc, which I think is the likeliest thing that they would do.
Swedish connection.
I, however, would like to see them really put pressure on Boston and put Nylander, Matthews, or Nylander, Marner, and Tavares together and just say, you know what? Try to match this. See what you can do.
And then do you sit Nyes or you put Nyes with Yarncroc and Holmberg?
That's what I would do, I think. Mm-hmm. But to your point, like Nyes is struggling. Like it's a long season. This is like double the amount of games he's played. And now playoff games, like he was talking to our man Joshua Cloak after the game. Like he's feeling it like physically. Like these playoff games are no joke physically. So yeah, like I don't know what you do with him.
How many minutes is Nyes even playing, right? Like
he played 14 in game two. I think he played around 10 in game one, but yeah, like not a ton. His penalty killing minutes obviously have been sporadic. And that line, like that's the other thing. Like we talk about Marner and his offense. That line has been asked to play against Pasternak. Not an easy matchup. And they've kind of done okay. Like the Pasternak line had that late goal. At the end of the first period in game two. But other than that, they've been pretty quiet. And maybe if you're Sheldon Keefe, you're just like, you know what? I'll take that. If Pasternak's line is going to score, where else is Boston going to score? You know what I mean? Like they might be thinking that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's part of what they were looking at late in the season was Tavares's line being more used in a defensive capacity, which is really interesting because that's like a relatively new idea.
Yes. Well, it actually dates back to the old times when they were facing Boston. Remember when they were using Tavares' line against Bergeron and they were just like, didn't have a hard time. Yeah, it didn't go amazing. But the Nylander situation is just so strange. We haven't talked about it on the podcast. Very bizarre how the whole thing played out where he plays in all 82 games. He literally is like never, ever hurt. And then after game 82, it's like, oh, where is he at practice? And then they refuse to say anything. And now it feels like they're trending away from let's not say anything to let's not be ridiculous with this. Let's just like answer a little bit of what's being asked. I don't know. How did you find that Nylander stuff from afar? Because in Boston, it was very bizarre.
Just because they were saying, I mean, Keith basically said, I've been told not to say anything about my lineup.
Literally. Injuries. Yes, yeah. Literally told not to say anything.
And then, Boston coach is saying, I don't even tell my wife what the lineup is.
Is that, and refusing to talk about the goalies. And I mean, it's a very hockey kind of thing. Like this doesn't happen really in other sports. Like you have to say what injuries are in the NBA. You have to say what injuries are in the NFL. I mean, in baseball, like, you know, starting pitchers days in advance, it's very kind of silly. Like, I don't really get the point of it, but it's obviously a big deal. Like them not having Nylander in game one, you could feel it. And I mean, you could feel it in game two, even. They just don't have a great threat when he's not around beyond Matthews. You know what I mean? Like there are other guys who might be able to score, but Nylander, every shift he's on the ice, you think he might score because he's that good. Obviously he struggled down the stretch, but he's just like a very scary opponent, I think, for other teams. And the Leafs don't have like a ton of scary opponents beyond Matthews and him.
Well, because Nylander, if he gets on the ice against a third or fourth line, which is part of the thinking with having him play on that that Holmberg line, is he can really burn your third D pair or your fourth line, right? Like it's the way
that you know what's interesting, James? That actually hasn't happened. So he's played 100 minutes with Pontus Holmberg in the regular season. How many points do you think he had in those 100 minutes?
No, I know it hasn't worked, but that's the theory, though. And I think if you're the other team, you have to respect that even though it hasn't worked in 100 minutes, he's on the ice, right? And like, he's a game breaker, guy who had 98 points during the regular season.
Yep.
And if you've got Kevin Shattenkirk and Peak out there as your D pair, you're worried the whole time. Because what if Nylander wants to start dancing on his edges and cut to the net, and are they going to be able to stop him? Do you think Nylander got hurt in the second game of the back-to-back on Wednesday against Tampa?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's possible. It's so hard because we know so little and we haven't had a chance to talk to him. They've not made him available yet. But I wonder if based on what our man Chris Johnson has reported, like he just woke up the next day and just felt off. Like maybe it wasn't like one play. You know what I mean? Maybe he just literally woke up the next day and it was just like, I mean, Chris has used the word stiff. Like maybe he just literally woke up the next day and he's like, I don't feel right. You know what I mean?
That makes me think of like head injury. I mean, I know they speculating on injuries isn't great, but we're kind of left in this.
Well, that's what they force, right? If you don't want to say anything, you force speculation. That's the problem with it.
I've seen all kinds of speculation too. Like you asked what I've seen from being at home, and like you're looking at social media and there's all kinds of pseudo insiders trying to say, oh, it's this or it's that. I've heard, oh, maybe it's a back spasms. Maybe he's got a problem with his ribs. Maybe it's, you know, like a, maybe it's a head injury, concussion thing. Like, you know, stiffness is pretty, pretty vague. It could be a lot of different things. So you seem to think though, that I know you wrote about if he comes into the lineup, you seem to think there's a decent chance he plays in game three.
Yeah. And that's just based on watching him. Like he was at that morning skate, like he was one of the last guys on the ice, and as the skate rolled along, like he didn't take part in every drill during the skate, but after everyone had left the ice, or most people had left the ice, he started kind of like working himself up to stuff. Like you could see his speed was ramping up, his intensity was ramping up. He was doing a lot of the drills that he normally does at the end of skates, and he was looking better and better. He was looking more explosive, but again, like it's just going to be how he feels. And they could use him obviously in a lot of different fashions, including on their power play, obviously, and their penalty kill actually. But their power play does get a goal from Tavares, but their power play is just not the same when he's not on it. Like you see Marner in his spot on the power play, and like the shot is just not a threat. Where Nylander from that spot is a threat. And
well, game one they had Yarncroc on power play one, and God love Yarncroc, and he's played well in this series. And
he really,
you know, I'm a big fan of him as a player, and I have been for a long time, but he just on power play one, it's like, what is he doing out there? And that was the one changed. Is that the only lineup change they really made from game one to game two, was changed power play one?
Yeah.
And I think that was the right change, but you're right. Not Nylander is such a big part of what made the power play dangerous all year.
Well, and on the entries, they really wanted a right shot in that spot, because usually Marner's down there just to the left of the goal, right shot. You can kind of, you're open to see the ice and make plays basically to everyone. And the left shot, it's harder with the goal being right there. But they just put Bertuzzi beside the net, and they have Tavares go to the bumper and try something else. And obviously that's worked at times during the regular season, albeit with Nylander there instead of Marner. But anyway, they need their power play to be a force. Like their penalty kill, we touched on it earlier. I don't think their penalty kill is ever going to be a strength.
I need their penalty kill to be average is what they need.
Just okay.
They need to stop taking bad penalties too. Like they gotta, like, you know, end of the game, like what Lyubushkin was doing. It's like, what are you doing?
Stop. Yeah, you mentioned a bad penalty. Like I mentioned McKay, but a worse one was, it was actually tied into the Lyubushkin thing, is when Bertuzzi slashes Marchand after the whistle and he gets an extra two. And they came up with a really big kill at that point. Like, we should give them credit for that kill, because, you know, that's the game right there. You lose. You're up 3-2. You give up a goal. It's tied. You might lose in overtime. But they managed to find a way to kill it. Let's take a break, and then we should talk some Samsonov and anything else that is on your mind ahead of Game 3. I do think we should point out just how insane that Nylander injury stuff is. Like I dug it up with help from Chris that it had been like 7.5 years since he was last, when he last missed a game to injury. That's nuts. I mean, he's missed like the odd game here and there with illness, but never with injury. I don't think of him as an Iron Man or anything like that, but he kind of is until now. Like, it's really crazy that that was the time when all of a sudden injury would crop up, you know, after the 82nd game. So anyway,
he takes very good care of himself physically. Like
very underrated.
He's a specimen, and you know, he puts in extra time, and you know, this isn't like a Phil Kessel kind of situation where he's an Iron Man for freaky genetic reason. Although, I mean, Nylander's genetics are good too, obviously, but I'm sure that all the preparation and the shape that his body's in is a big reason why he's not missing games.
I actually do think, James, like the perception of him, because he's known to be like so cool and like he doesn't get super emotional, kind of makes it easy to overlook that side of it. As someone like who is that, like, it's not anyone's fault. Like, I'm there every day. I see it, and I don't obviously see, you know, the gym or, you know, how he eats or anything like that. But like that side of him, I think is probably a bit underrated, like how dialed in he is into how he takes care of himself and like how much he's working on his game and everything like that. So anyway, we'll see if he comes back for Game 3. They would obviously love to have him back, because, you know, Boston will come back with a response. Before we get to Samsonov, did you like the decision that the Bruins made to go to Allmark in Game 2 after Swayman had played really well in Game 1 and obviously hadn't lost to the Leafs all season?
Yeah, I think it's the same thing that we're talking about with the Leafs. It's like you stick with what worked well all season. You don't deviate from that just because you're in the playoffs and it, you know, something happens in one game. And I don't, Allmark wasn't a problem in that game. I mean, there were some big saves that he made there, and you know, I don't think he's the reason they lost. And then, I mean, the Boston's got the luxury of having probably two of the top 10 goalies in the league on their team. So if I was them, I would keep rotating.
Okay,
unless there's a clear separation that, you know, you get to Game 5 or something and Swayman's clearly better and you want to play him in Game 6 or something like that.
So I think that's all very fair, and I don't necessarily disagree. The only thing I would counter is the playoffs are not the regular season, and to treat it the same is not, you're ignoring that it's a small series and it's a small sample size. And like, it reminds me of what happens sometimes in baseball. I mean, we saw it with the Blue Jays where it's like, well, we take our, I mean, it's actually different in the playoffs for starting pitching where you take the pitcher out earlier, but it just reminds me like playoffs are different. They are not the same as the regular season. And to be switching your goalie every single game, seen that work?
You bring up baseball. Like, I mean, just because it hasn't happened before doesn't mean it shouldn't be the way that it is. Like, I think that this is where goaltending is evolving to, where we're seeing teams play much more of a tandem system across the league, unless you've got...
That's over 82 games, right? It's a long season. Like, there is a reason
Playoffs is even more of a grind. Like, you play every second night, you're traveling. Like, it's hard. Like, I don't think the playoffs are easier. You get overtime games thrown in there. I think that the evolution of the position is there's going to be more and more teams doing this. There were teams carrying 3 goalies this year. And
I don't think you're right.
You don't think it's going to happen?
No, I think you're right in the regular season. Yeah, I think you're right. In the regular season, it will be tandem, but I think teams will always prefer to use one goaltender.
In baseball, you go through a rotation of 4 or 5 starting pitchers, right? And you cycle through.
Well, actually, in the playoffs, you cut out 2 pitchers entirely and you just use 3.
But like, why isn't that, if you have 2 goalies who are relatively equal in quality, which is a rare situation, but that's where Boston is at. You know, if they're playing if you only play every second game, you're playing, I mean, you're kind of playing twice a week, right? A little bit less than that. It's probably enough.
It just feels like making change to make change. Like, there was no reason, like, Swayman played, I mean, the interesting thing is Allmark actually played better than Swayman down the stretch, but Swayman played well in Game 1. They won. Why do you need to change? Like, just because
that's how their team is built. But then you know what they've got? They've got 100% their team is built that way because they have two of the 10 best goalies in the league on their team. So they can do that. But so then you've got Swayman coming in tomorrow. You got Swayman coming in tomorrow and he's 100% rested and ready to go. The interesting thing that they've been able to do is that Ullmark and Swayman are tight. They're friends. They agree with the arrangement. There's no animosity there. They're good with alternating. That's the hard thing. Often there's ego and there are guys that want to play every game that come into play. If you don't have that and you can make these decisions in a vacuum, I don't see any reason why this can't work, even though it's not something that we've seen regularly in the NHL.
Well, I mean,
historically.
To counter myself, last year they tried going with one guy and then it didn't work and they changed like right at the end and that didn't work. I don't know. I mean, there's no other team that really has this problem or not
Stick with what brung you here is what I say. Well, look at the Islanders. Like they're starting Varlamov in their games.
Well, he was better down the stretch than Sorokin. Like, yeah.
But they're in a situation where they could probably rotate back and forth. True. Not that it's going to matter if they're getting outshot. Did you see the shot attempts in that game last night? You probably weren't keeping an eye.
I heard.
110 to 25. Like it was just, I felt bad for the Islanders at the end of that game.
Well, you brought up Samsonov, or maybe I brought up Samsonov, and the possibility of him not starting in game two. I don't think that was ever a thing. Like, he was always going to start game two. But if he didn't play well in game two, then game three would become a conversation. But he responded. Like, I don't think he was tested a ton, but he made some big saves at big times. Like, good for him. Like, that's the bounce back they've needed. And, like, credit to them as a whole. One thing I think has been true about this team, especially in the second half, like when they've had a real stinker where like it's like one of those flashpoint moments where it's like things are getting a little tense, they always seem to bounce back. Like that's been true of this team all year, and him included, obviously, in the second half.
And they didn't, you know, when they get the lead, they're not just collapsing and not, you know, they didn't. They only give up 9 shots on goal in the second, 10 in the third. Like there wasn't any, I don't know. Like the Leafs were relatively good defensively other than, you know, the breakdown. Obviously the breakdown on the Pastrnak goal was terrible, but especially late in the game when they had to lock things down, it didn't really feel like they were running around and on edge. And so all that is to say, yeah, Samsonov played well, but I think he had some decent help in front of him in that game.
You're right. And that was an issue, obviously, in the regular season. Like, and something you and I both wondered about is like, can they lock down a game when they're up one in the third period on the road, especially? And they did. And like, obviously, it's just one game. But that's a question we had. I really am kind of blown away that Edmondson played 9 minutes in the third period. But
that's, I mean, keep.
But you know who I think it is, partly or not even partly. You know who runs their defense? Mike Van Ryan. You know who coached Joel Edmondson in St. Louis when they won a cup? Mike Van Ryan. Like he knows him, trusts him clearly. And it hadn't been a great night for that pairing. So that's an evolution that actually worked.
Well, Edmondson, when he gets the puck, he's not going to be making the highlight reels there, but that's not what he's there for. He's there to make sure no one's in front of the net, and it's going to be a war in the corners. And I think if you got a 1-goal lead late in the game, that's the kind of player past iterations of the Leafs have lacked at times.
Yeah. Yeah. Very fair. So looking ahead to game 3, obviously the Nylander question is outstanding. We won't know that until we'll know that probably until puck drop.
I wonder if they could just play him like 10 games, 10 minutes or something in a game, like if he's not 100%.
It's hard to
play him power play and like
down the line. Yeah, just play him on the third line. Don't play him that much. I mean, that's an underrated part of this. It's not just whether he can play. It's like how effective can he be if he's not himself? Like can even Nylander at 75% though is better than almost all of their players. So
yeah, I think if he can give it a go. What's 75% of 98 points? Like 74 points. So he would still
be third on the team in scoring. Right? Or how many points did Marner have? Yeah, a little bit more than that, I think. So what will you be looking for in game 3? What are you curious to see?
I'm curious to see if they get more Well, I mean, obviously, if there's any changes with the lineup, but I'm curious to see if they get more from Marner, if he kind of plays his way out of this funk. I'm curious to see if they make any changes. If Nylander doesn't come back, do you think they just roll the exact same lineup again, same D pair, same forward group because they won?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be my guess. I mean, right. You're right. You could make it. You could try to make a change with Nyes, but as I pointed out, it's not like an obvious, easy change. So yeah, I do. Yeah. You know what I should add about Marner? What I noticed, and maybe it's just like a feel thing from watching him up close for so long. I feel like I can kind of tell when he's tense and tight, and like we saw that a lot in the first half. We've seen that obviously in recent postseasons. And he really didn't feel that way to me in that first game. And it was confirmed when he came out and did his media scrum afterward. And he was exactly the same way. Like, he was light. He wasn't tense. They had just lost 5-1. But you didn't feel like the tension starting to set in. And to me, that was like a really positive sign, because he's, when he's at his best, and you think back to that 2019 series, he's just playing like light. He's not overthinking. Like, you can tell he's not burdening himself with like the pressure of his situation and what he needs to do and everything like that. I do wonder about that line. Like, I wonder how much they can produce, especially with the matchup that they have. But I kind of think he's going to have a game here pretty soon. Like, I can kind of see that happening. I just like the undercurrent, I think. And Sheldon Keefe went out of his way to praise Marner after the game, which I did not.
I made
which is not too, and, right. It's not, that's not an accident. Like, that's, you want to make sure, like,
I was going to say that, like, they probably know what, like, the narrative out there, and like, you know, social media, sure. I know you probably haven't been following it, but like, you know, yeah. I even had people texting and DMing me videos of, you know, there's the one play where Marner held up, the puck goes in the corner and he doesn't go after it. Like, that video was passed around everywhere on social. Like, he's become,
yeah.
It's become a real thing. So, and I'm sure the team's aware of that. So when I saw Keith, he went out of his way to single out Marner more than it felt like. He wasn't asked specifically about Marner. He just brought up, you know, how well he played. And so if you're right that what you just said about the way that he was after the game, that goes back to what you said about Keith and about experience. And I think that, you know, like the Leafs have been here, you know, and that's what Chris wrote after game two, is that, you know, maybe finally 8 years in, some of like the battle scars that they've got, losing a 5-1 game at the beginning of the series, they know it's not the end of the world. I mean, they've been there before. They were there last year and they won the series. So there's not going to be the panic that the way that it has maybe been there in the past. So
yeah,
if Marner breaks through and at home in game three or game four, then I like the Leafs' chances in the series.
Yeah, I do like that point you made, because like they were even talking about it after game one, that look what happened to them last year in game one against Tampa, where they get blown out and then they come back and win game two. It's almost like
exactly human nature. Like, you have that reference point and you have that lived experience that you know that you're going to be all right. So
yeah, that's exactly what playoff scars and experience do. So we'll see. Anything else you want to note before we wrap? Have we covered everything?
I feel like we've talked about like almost every single player on the roster throughout the course of this podcast. Like, is there anyone that, the one thing I would say on the Samsonov situation is that, obviously, part of the consideration with not taking him out after game one is that Wohl has not been good for a long stretch, right? Like, I think they need Samsonov to be the guy, I think. Like, I wouldn't feel that confident putting anyone else in there.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I think if Wohl had played better
down the stretch, struggles in game three, I think I'd probably still play him in game four.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, the one thing I would add too that is unrelated to this is I really do want to see where they're going to be able to find goals from. That's been an issue, obviously, dating back to last year, dating back to previous postseasons. They get three in game two. Well,
they need one a game from Matthews, right? Like, I mean, that's like his average. And then they're going to need... Like,
where is it else? Or where else?
Right. So. Well, they get... Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, well, it's... one thing that's been different than a lot of this maybe we didn't talk about it enough, but it's down the lineup with their forward group. This is the best that they've played. This is the best defensively that they've gotten from their third and fourth line, I think, all season, this last little stretch.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to be back. We're not sure. Potentially after game three, if not after game four. Game three is on Wednesday. Game four is on Saturday.
Let's see how many people listen to this show. And if it does really, really well, share this episode with your friends. If there's demand for us to do more, we will do more of these. In past years, we've done every game, which is hard to do with travel and everything. But certainly, like, anytime there's a big development or a big game, we'll do a podcast. I mean, we should probably do, you know, 5, 6, 7 after those games if we can.
Oh, baby. Yeah, it's going 7. Maybe not. You never know. Be sure to check out the Athletic Hockey Show every Wednesday with our guy, Frankie Corrado from TSN. He's on with Sean Gentile and Down Goes Brown. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thanks to Punch, our producer. Thank you to you, James, for being you. And we will talk again soon. See ya.